And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Friday, July 9th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tass? Got the Top Shot Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey.
I think, did anybody else hear the AO?
No, I didn't hear it.
I'm just trying to hop in early as I can on these AOs, to be quite honest.
Good. The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Finally, the man making the magic happen is JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live on YouTube. Y'all know the drill. Smash that like button, leave a comment below the vid, and subscribe if you haven't already to No Dunks on YouTube. Keep sending in your questions and your comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com, the number one website in the world for... No Dunks merchandise. All right, let's get into it. We got a little Is This News later. It is Friday. It's the drop. So we've got some rapid fire fun. We, of course, have Tweet of the Night. But the Suns beat the Bucks for the 2-0 lead in the NBA Finals. Booker hitting threes. Mikal Bridges fantastic. Chris Paul doing his thing. Tass, Phoenix up 2-0 as we head back to Milwaukee on Sunday night. What's your big takeaway from this victory from Phoenix?
Yeah, very disappointing for everybody outside of Phoenix that we don't have a 1-1 series going back to Milwaukee, right? It just feels like this is the Suns series. They are so in command, up and down their lineup. They are getting performances. I know I took the Bucks in six, but I also said, don't listen to me. I am buying into the storyline. I like the storyline. I'm trying to write a script here. I like the Giannis Antetokounmpo coming back from an injury storyline a little bit more. Drew and Chris say we're playing for our injured superstar. And going into game two, I thought this could all come together. And the injured superstar, he wrote his part so well. 42 points for Giannis Antetokounmpo. How freaking commanding a performance that was. 40-plus minutes out there. The guy's knee just bent backwards last week. But I kind of bought into the Bucks because I just thought at least one of those supporting players, at least one of those two guys, Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, would show up in each game. Especially Chris Middleton, but if both of those guys don't perform in the same game, you're going to lose. They shot a combined 12 of 37. They shot 30% combined in this game, and I almost respect Drew's game more because he kept firing away a little bit. You know, he was sort of caught in between. He reminded me of a pre-championship Kyle Lowry where he didn't know if he was passing or shooting. He just wasn't the most decisive player out there, but at least he shot. Chris Middleton, I think Mikal Bridges really got to him. He shot 10 times in the first half, only 6 in the second half. He was just reluctant. And I thought watching him in the last series that that wouldn't happen. So although the Bucks played really, really hard, I think that was their number one adjustment coming into this game. They played hard. They won the rebounding battle, the offensive rebounding battle by 7, the points in the paint battle by 26, second chance points, fast break by 10 points, free throw attempts by 9 points. They had their leading score beating the other team's leading score 42-31 by 11 points, and they still lost by 10. They played frickin' hard. They showed the other defense a bunch of looks, but the Suns got performances from everybody. Devin Booker could not be swayed. Got in his face, but he still was banging home those three-point shots to score 31. You mentioned Mikal Bridges. How impressive was that for him to score 27? And CP took over to score 23. It wasn't just, hey, this team shoots more threes and scores more threes and the other team doesn't hit as many threes. It was the fact that the Bucks just didn't perform, and it's got to be A little bit deflating for Giannis to go score 42 and his other guys just didn't do enough. Like, you look at the whole game and you think, okay, you know, down six, few minutes left. Pat Connaughton misses a three. Then you give the other team three opportunities to hit a three. So it could have been, you know, a three-point game with only a few minutes left. So you kind of feel positive going into game three if you're the Bucks, but at the same time, the gas, the wind has got to come out of Giannis's sails a little bit, seeing his guys not perform in a game that could he repeat? I mean, how do you repeat 42 points? So that's it's deflating. It's deflating going back game three.
Yeah, did the Bucks, Trey, waste an all-time great game from Giannis with the 42-12 and four and great blocks too? The 20 there in the third quarter. He kept them alive, kept them in the game. Did they waste it? Do they have any chance to still make this a series? You know, they obviously haven't lost at home yet, as Pat Riley always reminds us. But what do you think?
Both are true. This series is not over. The Bucks have played decent, I would say. They've played decent basketball. They just haven't put a full game together. If you get game one, or if you get game two Giannis during game one when the Bucks are actually hitting threes, probably win game one. If you hit some threes in game two, a minus 33 differential at the three-point line, you throw that out there with Giannis going for 42, probably win game two. Bucks just haven't put together a full game yet, and they 100% wasted a Giannis game. That was a legendary performance by Giannis, like you're saying, Skeets. The first 20-point quarter in an NBA Finals game since Michael Jordan in 1993 against the Suns. Wow. That's just pretty crazy that that happened. But, I mean, when he's out there looking incredible, you know, we said after game one, it looked like he had a little bit more to give in transition, just putting more pressure on the rim, and that was certainly the case in game two. We saw it right away. He came out and was dunking like crazy in the first quarter, but nobody else made shots, and that's the difference, right? Like, it feels like the Suns are getting strong performances from Chris Paul and Devin Booker every single time. DeAndre Ayton was the third guy in game one, had an almost 20-20 game, and Mikal Bridges was the third guy in game two for the Suns. Meanwhile, we haven't seen a third player for the Milwaukee Bucks yet in this series, and that's been 100% the difference for me. There's a lot of talk about rotations and coverages and all this kind of stuff. Jrue Holiday needs to make a shot, man. 7 for 21 last night. Like Tess was saying, he was more aggressive, which is what you wanted to see. But we need to see a full Jrue Holiday game in the finals if the Bucks are going to get any of these wins.
Yeah, it was weird to just see him keep missing like left-handed layups in there, like makeable shots. And he missed like another three or four in this game. But he, yeah, like who shit the bed more, Lee? I think it's a fair question that Tess sort of set up there. But I know they're both bad, but was it Jrue or was it Chris? At least Jrue went down firing away and had a couple like baskets there in the fourth quarter. He had that and one on Booker in transition. He had scored right before that where Middleton was the classic Ferris wheel right at the bottom.
But loading not up at the right now.
You can get off or off. It was just like hovering just like one car over. You're like, what am I doing here? I'm not doing anything. That was the classic Middleton game down there on the Ferris wheel. But who was worse, in your opinion?
Well, you can say who was worse, or you can say the Phoenix Suns defense just made it so impossibly difficult for them to get any sort of flow going, any sort of rhythm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really where a lot of the credit goes to, because at both ends of the floor, the Phoenix Suns seem really to understand exactly what they're doing, whether they're moving that ball on offense to find the best shot, or defensively, they're just ready to switch. They're ready to get to whoever's going to take that shot. And that's just where it's making it so difficult for the Bucks to get anyone outside of Giannis going. Inside, that's where he's dominating. That's where he's strong, because he should be. He's great. But then when it goes out to Middleton, it's like, I mean, do you remember Middleton getting more than a couple of shots that weren't someone either closing out or someone trapping him or someone making it just difficult for him versus the Phoenix Suns? Devin Booker hit 7 threes last night. I would think 4 of those at least felt like they were completely wide open. And wide open for Devin Booker is basically like if you just give him a second, half a second, that's all he needs. And there was a key play. Giannis is, when Giannis is on the floor, the Bucks are still winning. They're winning those Giannis minutes. And last night, it was a 5-point game with around 8 minutes to go, and Budenholzer took him off. And it looked like he had something wrong with his shoe because he sort of took it off. So I'm not sure if it was like Budenholzer just trying to get him some rest, or he just needed to do something there with his shoe.
He said he had a cramp. So.
Yeah. Was it? Okay, right. Saying that, yep.
Right, okay. So, and then what happened after that? Chris Paul pick and roll straight away to DeAndre Ayton. He scores, and then Devin Booker basically gets a screen, and Middleton's on him, and Middleton just looked a bit gassed, a bit of a lazy closeout. Booker hits that three, puts it back out to 10 again. The Bucks just cannot sustain those sorts of, like, when you get to within 5 points, you know, it's a 1 or 2 possession game there. You can't then have it out to 10 points like within a minute later. That mm-hmm. just takes the wind out of your sails there. So I just thought, you know, Phoenix played a much better performance all round at both ends. And that's why life was difficult for Drew and Chris Middleton. We know Chris Middleton does this, though, as well. Would it shock anyone if he has 35 in game three? Because that's what we saw. He basically won two games against the Atlanta Hawks, just getting into his bag and hitting those shots. So I was very, very impressed with how Phoenix, you know, again, Milwaukee had a really good start. They came out focused and they built about a 9-point lead. Then Phoenix got back into that game pretty quickly and they didn't really allow Milwaukee to get close enough to make a push. So all credit, I think, goes to Phoenix here. And the Bucks. I also don't think the series is over, though. I just think a couple of those things they clean up. And, you know, when you're on the road, those shots that sort of just lip out of the rim, you know, they pop out. Maybe they go in when you've got the home crowd behind you, because that's what happened, I think, for the Bucks, a lot of their offense in both of these games. So we'll see. But again, Devin Booker, the 7 threes, if he's getting uncontested shots for three, and as Tass mentioned as well, another key play where they had three chances to shoot a three late in that game and Chris Paul hit the corner three. That's just an absolute backbreaker there for the Bucks. So, you know, certainly they're not dead, but they need those little sort of 50-50 things to go their way in game three. And maybe they will in front of their home fans.
Yeah, every time the Bucks made that, like if you want to call it a little run, it felt like Booker or Chris Paul just threw the stiff arm up and said, no, that's close enough. Because there are numerous examples, just to give you a couple in the fourth. I'll go to the start in the third, even halfway through that. Middleton hit a three, cut it to five, and then Chris Paul comes down, you know, responds with a three, and then Booker drains a jumper. It's back up to double digits. Then you get into the fourth early. Pat Connaughton scored inside, little putback. Bucks got a bit of life. It's a 6-point deficit again here. And then, nope, it's immediately nine after Booker again hits a number three. 90 seconds later, Brooke scores inside. It's a 5-point game. They're like, they're right there. It's a couple possessions. And then Chris Paul, gets the eight and lob. Booker comes back, hits a couple threes, and it's back to a double-digit lead. And then it would happen again there. That one part where they got all those offensive rebounds, that really sealed the deal. I mean, that was the backbreaker where Chris Paul hit the three after they just kept getting the ball and Bucks were getting stops. But you got to get the rebound. And, man, every single time, that really was impressive. And, Lee, how about the very solid play of all very solid plays, the 10-pass sequence.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you have prepared here, Lee, because when I went on vacation, I was having to do work for my special play, so I'm sure you clipped something off. I know you didn't do it on Twitter last night. You put up a 10-second violation, so I'm excited to see what you've saved for the show today. I know you were doing work on this late last night, right?
Yeah, it was incredible because
let's see the play. Where is it?
I got a text message from Fred Katz, who said after that play, I was so close to tweeting, Lee Ellis has to change his pants.
You were sorry, Fred Katz. He never wears pants. Jokes on you.
Yeah, I had the shorts on. It was an incredible play, and to finish as well without the dunk there, just to get the and one.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
That was great stuff there. But that play, people are saying it's the most beautiful play they've ever seen.
I wouldn't do that only because the deflection happened.
It sort of broke it
up a little bit, but then it continued.
it was great stuff. And but you know, Monty Williams was asked about it after the game, and he said, "Listen, that's who we are." And he learned that from Popovich. He said, "When that ball moves around like that, keeps everybody involved, and it also helps their defense because everyone just is focused. They know they're involved in the play. They take ownership of it because you know it doesn't really matter who scores when the ball moves like that. It's just such great. It's such a great exercise for the team to build it because they know that they're all sort of focused and they're locked on just getting the right basket, getting the right play. So, beautiful stuff."
So no clip is what you're saying.
I didn't. It was clipped by about a million people last night. I'm like, there's no point in me.
Maybe it'll come up in tweet. This literally was the first three paragraphs of the AP recap, and we're not even getting to see your thumbs.
Thumbs up. Jesus.
I don't know, man. This is disappointing. After you cursed my vacation, the biggest very solid play in the NBA Finals in 7 years, we're not even seeing thumbs. Crazy.
Yeah, listen,
crazy,
but the thing is, you know, with the clips last night, like I say, even in game one, like everyone's got it. There's only one game, everyone's watching it. It's like, there's not really much point. I'm not going to get the traction I would like on this. Instead, I just got tagged in a million. I'm like, great, thanks everyone. They still appreciate. They
good.
Still
you
remember.
Gained some followers last night, did you?
Not really.
Probably because they were expecting you to do a very solid play and you didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. No. I don't know. I personally would have done it, as you can see, but I don't know. Maybe another one will happen. Maybe another one will happen. Hopefully when you're on a flight here. So when you land from the airplane, you got to do it.
Well, you can get the Wi-Fi on GoGo these days, so maybe so. But I won't be in the air during any flights, during any games, so I'll be locked in. Mm. But,
okay, good.
So, I personally liked how the deflection was part of the play. And
you did, okay.
They recovered, and it was just because it was great. Offense and defense.
I felt bad for the Bucks. I mean, you can't play better defense with a team that's moving the ball around like that. Like, Tucker's everywhere on this play. And then, unfortunately, there's the broken up part of it. And then it ends with Ayton inside. And I think Tucker gets the foul, right?
Yeah, like, I think so. Yeah.
Hustling his ass back to try and stop him. But, so you like that part.
No? Yeah, and Tucker fights back. And then he bends over, kind of tucks his tail between his legs. He's just gassed.
Yeah.
Because that made it so great that he was just done because they just out-basketballed them. You know, they out-passed them. And that was a cool performance. I mean, that's what it felt like every time the Bucks got to 6 or 7 points. They got it down to 5 at that one point. Yeah, like we said, you know, the 3 three-pointers with 4 minutes left, they 2 offensive rebounds, and finally a shot from the Suns. That just felt so deflating every time. But the Bucks, they continued to fight. So, if you zoom out, maybe at home it's different. But if you're going to win, you got to win one on the road, and it felt like that one wasn't too far off. I just thought Drew was. They were definitely makeable. They were definitely makeable, and Chris was rattling away. Like, I don't think the coverage. I know Mikal Bridges threw him off, but if you look back at the Eastern Conference Finals, guys are all up in his face, and he somehow just finds a way to shoot over them and score. And this wasn't any different to me. He just kind of stopped shooting, and it was one of those Middleton games where he kind of faded away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not a series until Chris Middleton has a 5-for-16 game in at least one of them. It's just, you just put that in pen. It's going to happen. And it's usually happening early in series, and then he gets going. So, yeah, you can see why Milwaukee fans, at least, are like, no, we've been in these games, like we just went over, and we just got hammered from three-point land, like Trey said. Like, yeah, why couldn't we take 2 at home and tie this up? I'll say, though, man, I don't know if it's just because I'm a prisoner of the moment. In that final couple minutes where they were getting all those offensive rebounds, and I think a part of it with the Suns crowd going insane, like the frantic energy in that building, it's like, it just felt to me as like, oh, yeah, Suns are going to win the title here. Now we're just going to wait to find out how many games it is, because maybe it just felt like they had to get one of those, and there were opportunities there, and Phoenix did a good job of closing the door time after time. And they got 2 guys with Booker and Chris Paul that can just, they feel confident with whatever shot they're going to take, and they were locked in. I mean, Booker bounced back after game 1, and he hits 7 threes here in game 2. 31, like, no problem. He could do that again in Milwaukee. Let's do the finals MVP power rankings, though. How is it right now, Trey? Is it still Chris Paul 1? Did Booker overtake him? Yeah, okay, CP3 1, and then where do you go?
I think Chris Paul had a good enough game in game 2 after his incredible game 1 that he maintains the number 1 spot for me in the finals MVP power rankings. So I would go Chris Paul, Booker, and I think I'm sliding Giannis in at number 3. It's a tough call. You know, Ayton had an incredible game in game 1, 23 and 19. He was my number 2 at the time. What do you have last night? 10 and 11. A solid game, just not a lights out kind of game. Meanwhile, Giannis, a nice game 1. And then, you know, a legendary Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal style game 2. So, I don't know. It's actually a 2-man race at this point. If the Bucks pull off another... If the Bucks pull off a win in game 3, a pivotal game 3, we see another 40 and 10 from Giannis. Could talk me into a number 2 for him there.
Okay. Would you agree with that, Lee?
Well, 3 years ago, Steph Curry was the MVP finals favorite after the first 2 games against Cleveland, right? And it was like, wow, he's finally going to get the championship and the finals MVP. He would have to have a stinker, and Kevin Durant would have to have a monster game in game 3 to maybe swing it Durant's way. Well, KD had 43 in game 3. Steph Curry only had 11 points, went 1 for 10 from downtown. And, of course, game 4, the Warriors ended up killing the Cavs. And Kevin Durant did actually overtake him to win finals MVP. So it's possible, but it feels like it's going to be Chris Paul's, because it's going to be like, it's Chris Paul. He's gotten there finally. Unless Devin Booker was to go for like 45 in game 3 or something like that, and Chris Paul was to somehow have a stinker, maybe he could overtake him. But I think it's Chris Paul's right now to lose.
Tass, is that fair to say? Is it Chris Paul's to lose if they go on to win the series, of course? I think it's pretty close, actually, still. I mean, especially with whatever happened to Milwaukee. Between Booker and Chris Paul, yeah, I think it's still close enough, at least.
That's close enough. I think the fact that Mikal Bridges had 27 yesterday took away a little bit from Devin Booker's 31.
Yeah, you know, maybe.
If Bridges slowed down a little bit with his, you know, wasn't scoring at will when he, you know, had a little space, I think we'd look at Devin Booker's and say, yeah, I mean, those seven threes, most of them had hands in his face, but he was just smooth as butter. Like, even with Brook Lopez, a seven-footer standing out there just trying to block his vision, he was amazing hitting those shots. So, yeah, I still think it's Chris Paul's, no doubt. You know, Devin Booker can get sexy. Devin Armani Booker can get sexy and drop a 35. If he's got to have one where he, you know, takes over the game, like Lee mentioned about the Warriors. He's got to have a KD-like performance. He's got to have a LeBron-like performance from last year when Anthony Davis seemingly was the MVP favorite after two games. LeBron came back, stole that thing. He's got to have a biggie.
Yeah, I tweeted last night, I don't feel good for the Bucks' chances of winning this when Mikal Bridges is looking like Devin Booker, because he was phenomenal. And the Suns were just in this game at the beginning, Lee, because they were hitting threes. Like, a lot of them corner threes. Bucks had, what, a 20-0 points in the paint advantage after 12 minutes, but the Suns were in the game because, you know, it was Bridges, it was Crowder, it was all these guys just hitting threes and just sticking around. But Bridges, like, he wasn't just hitting threes. He was, like, a little off the bounce, a little in-between game. He was attacking the rim. Like, this is maybe the best game of his young career here, at least postseason game. 27's a lot from this guy. I mean, he's not he is not a Booker-like scorer. That's fine. He does a lot of other great things. But I don't see how you're beating this team when Booker's doing his thing, Chris Paul's the point guard, and then, oh, suddenly Mikal Bridges is, like, again, like a Booker light replica here.
And Devin Booker talked about that after the game, saying, you know, a lot of people say that or think that Mikal Bridges is just a sort of 3-and-D guy, but he's a lot more than that. And you saw that. He mixed up his game.
It was amazing last night.
Getting into that little mid-ranger as well. He had a nice little sort of spinning, turning layup there as well. So, he brings a lot to that team. He was also talking a bit of trash to the Bucks at one point after he hit a little mid-ranger. So, yeah, he's been a phenomenal, you know, his growth in this series or in the playoffs has been incredible. And that's the thing. I mean, you're getting, when he contributes, it's like, man, he's playing well. When it's someone like Pat Connaughton hitting four threes and he's, you know, almost the second best player for the Bucks, it just feels like that was found money last night. Every basket was like found money. Like, wow. So if Pat Connaughton's getting that and Middleton and Drew Holiday really playing well, then the Bucks probably win that game. But when it's like, wow, they needed all four of those threes from Pat Connaughton last night, it's hard to see how the Bucks can, you know, can win a game like that. But yeah, Bridges, fantastic. And he's got those long arms too, man. They just feel like, you know, he's an extra, you know, he's got something extra out there when he's defending. But I also thought that's just with the Suns. It feels like at the time, on the court at times, they've got six players. There's just so many people rotating and moving and getting open shots. And that's, for the Bucks, it's the opposite. It's like, if it's not Giannis, it's like they have to work so hard just to get a basket.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got our answer to what the Suns were going to do in terms of their backup center, Trey, and it was Torrey Craig. It was running with him. And then, he gets injured, and you know, we'll wait to find out his status. You know, doesn't return to the game. Who knows if he plays in Game 3. A little more. We got a little Frank the Tank in Game 2. But I guess, like, again, it's sort of the same question I asked when Saric went down for the entire postseason. Is this a concern at all for the Suns? Like, it's just another layer now. Now there's no Torrey Craig, but you're shaking your head. You're not concerned.
I don't think it's a concern yet. I mean, maybe if the entire Suns bench gets injured, it will then be a concern. But until it becomes a problem, it ain't a problem. Like, what are the Bucks doing to take advantage of the backup center on the Phoenix Suns? Nothing. Maybe they should bring Brook Lopez off the bench. I still think he needs to play more. The Bucks got crushed in Connaughton's minutes. Playing small was the reason they gave up all the offensive rebounds. But maybe you bring Brook Lopez in off the bench, give him the ball in the post every single time, slow it down, and let him go to work. I don't know if that is a way that maybe the Bucks could actually punish the Suns for not having a backup center or having to run Frank Kaminsky out there, but I don't know, man. The eighth and ninth man for the Suns is not the problem for me. It's the number two guy on the Bucks right now is the problem for me.
Yeah, and who the heck is it? Is it Middleton or Drew? Somebody step up.
It's Drew for me. I will officially say
it's true.
It is Drew Holiday for me. They traded so many picks and gave this guy a massive contract, and he's an all-defensive player who was saying he should be the defensive player of the year. He's not giving you everything on both sides of the ball. It's not happening.
He was pretty spectacular defensively last night, I thought. You know, they put him on Chris.
Okay, man. If you're a two-way player, you got to play both sides of the ball. Drew is blowing it for the Bucks so far. He was great when Giannis was not playing against the Hawks. Has been brutal so far in the finals.
Yeah. I mean, no, it has been great. They've both been bad in game two. They were brutal in Middleton and Drew, but defensively, I thought Drew gave a lot more than, of course, Chris, but who cares, I guess, if you can't score on the other end. Tass, are we going to see Giannis play 48 minutes in game three? I think that's a fair question to ask. I know Bud never wants to do it, but do they have to do it?
He played him 40 in this game, and I think that's probably the maximum. That's the Massimo I think you're going to get around there. He sits him every single first quarter. That's just the way it works. And it's so weird. It's like from the six-minute mark to the three-minute mark. I hear what you're saying. I mean, they have won Giannis's minutes when he's been out there. He sat those 8 minutes in this game, and they just don't know where to turn. We're watching Jeff Teague run the show. And it's, you know, Jeff Teague is actually playing fine. Nobody's making magic. From the Bucks, they shortened the rotation as much as they could. They basically went to, you know, 7.5 guys, and really, it's unfortunately it's back to the same story we've been talking about. They got to get performances from other guys, and hope that, you know, you guys talk about Frank Kaminsky and the backup bigs. Hope they get DeAndre Ayton in foul trouble. They got a little bit closer.
Are we gonna keep saying this? Are
they
we?
Got closer.
Oh my god!
4 fouls in this game. He did play 42 minutes, but Monty Williams wouldn't let him die. Wouldn't let him. He had a tough game out there, but Monty brought him back, with that Wired segment. So,
that's awesome. That was a great Wired segment. I mean, these are usually completely pointless, but that one was at least inspiring. I mean, hell, I wanted to run through a wall for Monty Williams after that. It was awesome with the look up and the grab of the arm.
Yeah.
It would be aggressive. It was just fantastic. It was like a nice long clip, too, that Wired segment. It was great.
Yeah, you're down on yourself because you set a high bar, and that's good. And that's good. Now go reach that bar.
That was awesome.
It was pretty cool. But we're just going to see some more Abdul Nader off the Suns bench. Abdul, do it for Egypt.
Illinois boy.
He was playing, 49 seconds there. Yeah, Nader's coming in for Kaminsky, so they got the Illinois connection there. It was weird to see him play the last 49 seconds of the game. Now we're getting too far into the nitty-gritty. way too far in those Illinois weeds right now.
Let it fly, Frank. 52 seconds, you couldn't get a three-pointer up? Come on, man.
Shoot
the ball.
So Lee, you are, we slipped it in there when Trey was getting angry that you didn't give us a tweet last night. We didn't get to see the damn thumbs here on today's show. I'm with TK, but you are flying now to the other side of the world. Well, you're going to be watching this game at what time over in Europe? Are you going to stay up until, I don't know, 4 in the morning? Whenever the hell it's going to be on
Eastern
Monday?
8 o'clock will be about 2 a.m. Tip-off
okay, 2
local
a.m.
time.
Okay.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. It's on the other side of the Atlantic, not the other side of the world. So,
true.
It should be fun. But, great series, man. Let's hope because if the Suns win game three, then obviously
you're sleeping
if
through
the Suns
game four.
Win game three, you won't even show up for our recap for game
I'm
four.
Done.
If
I'm
the
done.
Suns win game three, it's only a matter of probably is it over in four or we get the gentleman sweep and it's over in five in Phoenix.
Yeah, well, Devin Booker said to Malika Andrews, I think it was, that he's not going to show us that car, that awesome car that he's got again until they win. So the Suns kind of need to throw at least one of these games so we at least get game five back in Phoenix for that. Because what did you think of his outfit last night? Someone's calling him Colonel Sanders.
The power white suit look. I think he could pull it off, man.
I, you know what, though? I would have liked it a little more fitted. I thought it was actually just a little bulky on him. That's just my...
I was like,
you know, you'd very rarely see NBA players because all their clothes are pretty much, I guess, tailor-made, and they've got such incredible physiques that you can, dress them in. I thought, just looks a little... a little bulky. I don't know. Just the way he was walking in there. Yeah, just around the sort of midsection there. It's like, you want that to be super tight, don't you? To really highlight the curve or the straightness. I don't know. I just
like trying to imagine Devin Booker taking like fashion tips from you or fashion advice from you.
Maybe he needs to.
Mr. Baggy Man, of all people, too.
Maybe. I used to be a baggy man. I've tightened things up a little bit. I realized, you know. So I don't know. I just thought it wasn't quite as snug as it was, as it should have been. So, yeah.
Well, we are going to unfortunately not have like a preview show before Game 3 because it happens on Sunday night. So let's just throw it out here now. Can we get some predictions? It feels like, I don't want to put words in any of your mouth, but you guys are very high on Milwaukee's chances to make this a series. So I assume that means to win Game 3 and set up a very fascinating Wednesday Game 4 where it's the old 2-1 and everybody's hyped. Is that fair to ask to say? You think Milwaukee could win on Sunday?
They could win. I'm not high on their chances, though. I know they can. This was a close game down the stretch. They are fighting and battling at home. It would tell you that, a six-point swing one way with a few minutes left could be in the other direction. But, the feelings aren't good after that game, too. I hate to go on the gut, but the gut doesn't feel good. And I know Drew and Middleton tend to get better as series go on. Head says yes, gut says feeling a little gurgly down there if I'm a Milwaukee Bucks fan.
Somebody had some milk.
Too many
cheese
curds.
Dairy milk too. Not an oat milk, not a flax milk, not an almond milk, not a cashew milk. Straight cow. Yeah, it's gurgling.
They got good milk in Wisconsin, I think. Don't they, Trey? Mm. Isn't that a saying? We got great milk. The milk state.
That's what they're known as. The milk state. Finest cows in all 50 states.
Well, no, I was going to say, though, the Bucks were embarrassed in the first two games against the Brooklyn Nets. They got hammered. And we were like, oh, God. Oh, this is bad. Bud, you're gone. And they rallied. And now they got some help. They got some help with, of course, some injuries in that series to the Brooklyn Nets. And it took seven, but they overcame Kevin Durant and that team. So, you know, at least they've been through this before. I think that actually is beneficial. Is it not, Trey? Like you're down 2-0. You were in both of these games. And you're like, okay, we just got to go home and make this a best of three series if we can. Or at least win game three, of course, to make things interesting.
Must win game in game three. Yeah. And I certainly think it's possible. The Bucks have, like Tass said, they've gotten better basically as the series goes on for the entire time this playoffs. Even game one in Miami, they almost lost it with the Jimmy Butler take, won it in overtime, went on to sweep that series. No problem. So, you know, you got to hope if you're the Bucks that you shoot better from three in game three than he did in game two. I think they made 16 threes in game one, which was nice. They haven't had a lot of double-digit three-point games in the playoffs, but you need one in game three, and you got to hope that Giannis can give you something similar to game two, even if it's just from a production or a minute standpoint, really, like Tass is saying, play 40, 43, 45 minutes, something like that, because the Bucks are doing great when Giannis was out there. He's really showing up in his first finals, you know, playing on an injured leg in game one, looking all right, had the awesome block in game two, an incredible game. So I think it's there for the Bucks. They can get a win, and you got to be a little bit encouraged if you're riding the Chris Middleton Ferris wheel.
Right.
It's in the loading phase right now. You know, we're all getting on our gondolas, and it's about ready to go up. Game four, I would imagine, is probably the peak once it finally rotates up there. But if you're at the 3 o'clock spot, it's all right. It's all right. You might get a win. Game three, 3 o'clock on the clock. I like it for Chris Middleton.
And Lee, what do you think here?
Yeah.
Game three.
It's not over. I mean, the Bucks have been close enough that if, you know, a couple of things go their way, maybe they do steal one of those games. But they weren't able to do that in front of the Suns' home fans. Now they go home for a couple of games in front of the Deer District and the Deer fans out there. And you know they're going to be just as loud and just as crazy. You know, they haven't been to the finals in 50 years. They want this just as bad as the Suns do. And look, the Suns held serve. That's all they had to do in the first two games. The series can swing, you know, quickly. I certainly think, again, as you referenced the Brooklyn Nets series, you know, the Bucks were embarrassed in game two. It looked like that series was going to be over in four, and they come back and won that series. They were trailing against the Atlanta Hawks. Different sort of series, different concept there. But
you know, it's not over. I mean, the Bucks just need to have one of their sort of games where, you know, Bryn Forbes does come out and doesn't just clunk his first two threes. You know, instead he hits six threes and maybe just gives them a bit of a push. And maybe Chris Paul had six turnovers last night. Very uncharacteristic for him. Maybe he has a stinker. You know, maybe Booker doesn't get those shots to fall. But certainly the Suns are in a strong position. But I've seen enough from Milwaukee that to think that they're not dead yet. They're not dead and buried by any means. I mean, Giannis, considering he's playing even on that leg, and ESPN, we don't need to keep seeing it, by the way. We've seen it. We all know what happened.
Yeah, yeah, we've seen a lot of it now. Just Giannis, keep showing us the crazy fans.
Yeah, that's exactly. Giannis is not afraid. You know, he's getting to that free throw line, you know, and the Bucks fans will obviously not be counting him up or counting him down or anything like that. So he's not shying away from going inside and realizing, like, this is where we have an advantage. So I still think there's a chance here for Milwaukee. I think... I hope as well. I'd love it if they win both these two games. That'd be fantastic. That's what we want in this series.
Has it been released who the officials are for Game 3 on Sunday night? Is Scott Foster on the call? Because that'll get in Chris Paul's head maybe a little bit. Suns. I know he's one of the names to be calling one of these games, so it's probably going to be 3 or 4. I don't know if that's been released yet. But
he is, you know, I think as well in their top... their top group of officials too. So yeah, he's definitely getting the game here.
Oh no, he's definitely on. I've seen the full list and he hasn't called the game yet. So it's probably happening in Milwaukee and can't wait for that.
I mean, game three seems like it would be the perfect one. Calling the ace. Here comes Scott Foster. Bucks pick up a win. We got ourselves a series.
Oh, Jesus.
No.
You laugh about it, but I think it's going to be true.
Don't do it. Yep. I thought we were in the weeds talking about Abdul Nader. Now we're talking about the refs. I was just so excited for the time, the game time last night. I mean, I know Lee will be happy if he gets a game three when he's in Amsterdam that lasts only 2 hours and 22 minutes.
There was only two
fouls called in the first 9 minutes, I think it was, which is great. Yeah, that's what you want to do as well. Put the whistle away, refs. Come on, let them play. Let them play out there.
Tony Brothers, Sean Wright, and Zach Zarba. What a job.
What about Chris Paul trying to get that offensive foul on Giannis? I mean, you know, Chris Paul, everyone's like celebrating Chris Paul.
Once a game, he's got to do it. He's got to just remind you, like, hold on, do you want to trip?
I know.
You're like, oh, God. I know. Yeah, that was
worked,
bad.
Man. What about when he shoved Drew?
Flop, yeah.
Yeah, he's getting all the calls. He shoved $2 and somehow... shoved Drew into Devin Booker and everybody falling down. They got the call. He taught campaign to run into Brooke Lopez. They got the call. I mean, he got some nice calls.
People were saying that was a charge, that one, Chris Paul there, Lee. He flops.
By the definition of the rule, it probably was a charge because he established position. But it's just the nature. It's not in the spirit of the game to just get that sort of a call at that point. It's just like Chris.
The spirit of Chris Paul's game, I'll give him that.
I know. But oh my God, that's frustrating when it's just like, don't do that, Chris. Don't. All right? Everyone's in love with you right now. Everyone's cheering for you. Don't annoy everybody.
No, don't change. Don't change, Chris. Just keep leaning into it. I'll get angry about it, but I got to respect the hell out of it, especially if you get the whistle, which he does more times than not. All right. Let's hear from you guys in the stream team, though. Who you got winning game three? Are we looking at a sweep? Is it Suns in four? Is it Destiny, that guy, calling it? Is it a gentleman sweep? Is this thing going still 6 or 7, like a lot of us, obviously neutral fans, are hoping for? Everybody loves a long series, especially in the finals.
Speaking of Suns guys, are we talking about Suns guy later? Are we talking about 8K fans later? Or is now the time? I love the two dudes. There's like two, I don't know, they're 18 to 20 years old. One of them has like shoulder length blonde curly hair. Yeah. His buddy has like a center part. And every time they showed him, they're just going,
I love these guys.
I love these guys. I will subscribe to their podcast. See you on YouTube eventually. I'm sure those guys are going to do something. Hilarious.
That guy just like, like shaking his head nonstop.
That guy was amazing.
It's like giving me whiplash.
And then
there's, and again, I don't want to step on any tweet of the night toes if it's a possibility, but the guy that looked like he was flying at one point, like near the end.
Yeah. No, I don't have it for tweet of the night, but I do have a great tweet of the night that I'm going to bring up now because I've got so many tweet of the nights because it does have to do with the fans. It's from Tom Haberstroh. There are three 8K cams on planet Earth, and one of them is zeroed in. on this guy.
Yeah,
the fans over and over and over again. This fan was normal, at least.
Yeah.
The other guys, you guys mentioned them. There's the other one in the hockey jersey, the Suns hockey jersey, that just looks, high as a kite.
I love it. I love every single. We are getting. So weird. You know what I love? Great call by ABC, ESPN, whoever's producing this. I like Giannis at the line, and then we go two box. I usually hate a two box, but I like the two box of the fans like doing.
Yeah, that one's good.
The count up. That's great. Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, we're just watching. I know Lee, you may hate it because like you really want to focus on the free throw, but I think it works in that scenario. Yeah.
Well, he had one air ball last night, but I like the way that he's going to the line and he's basically saying, "Hey, everyone. I don't care. I'm still doing my routine. I'm doing the little imaginary one as well first." So he's not bowing to the pressure. He's like, I'm just going to keep doing my way. And what did he finish last? I think he finished not too bad.
It wasn't brutal.
It was about 60%, I think, he finished. So good on him. Good on him.
Yeah, 11 for 18.
Yeah.
That's good. I've tracked through the first two games because I'm interested because he continuously missing on the first free throw, and then he's banging home the second free throw. So I want to know his splits. He's 6 for 15 on his first free throw and 12 for 15 on his second free throw.
Wow. Through this series?
Through two games, yeah.
Wow. Wow. Way to break it down.
Nice adjustments.
Very good. Yeah.
I mean, he started getting good on the first one in game two, so my stat wasn't as good. But I do like the split screen, no doubt. I'm kind of over the fan thing. A lot of people emailing in and saying, you know what? I want to see the fans in the background. Like, I don't want just this guy. Well, I don't know.
It sounds like you were emailing that in, Taz. Taz loves to find somebody in the background. No doubt.
No doubt. I love doing that for Toronto, so I can see somebody. It did work once, if you guys do remember. I love pausing it on the home TV. Usually I'm spanning 1,000 people. I find 0 people I know. But there was that time I found the Levies.
Yeah, that's right. But now you can't. Not with these type of shots.
Just seeing the balding men right at the front of the... Right at the front of the camera.
Yeah, I was surprised that Nick Nurse was such a big Phoenix Suns fan, but it was cool to see him there supporting another team.
It does look nursey, no doubt.
Tassif, really? I mean, come on. He looks enough like Nick Nurse.
He's got some. That guy could be his bro.
Okay, yeah, Rick Nurse. That's his brother. But Tass, I think these 8K fan cams are going to win you over as we head to Milwaukee, because as Jim Wright says... Saying it again, can't wait to see the 8K beer chugs. That'd just wait until we see those rippling muscles in Milwaukee. People tearing off their shirts in 8K. A lot of people are talking about apertures here in the stream team. Look, man, we get it. This is just shorthand. We're calling it 8K because it's the future and we don't know what's going on. It looked amazing when they were showing the players. It looked like epic footage from a movie. And now they're just showing random people in the stands. And it's a movie, but a different one.
Oh, yeah. There's been some incredible crowd shots. I'm excited to see what Milwaukee brings. I think they are going to be able to sort of match the Phoenix crowd here and the characters. And, you know, we're going to get a lot of shots of outside the Deer District, or as Jeff Van Gundy keeps calling it, the Deer Valley. Though, as we all know, Schumann's right. It should be called the Deer Garden. Like beer garden. That's 100 times better. Anyway, you know we're going to see that, Lee, and they're going to be pumped. Hopefully the weather's nice there in Milwaukee on Sunday night. So, very excited.
Yeah, I can't remember. Was it drizzly there last night? I can't remember. Was that?
I'm not sure what the weather was like in Milwaukee. Yeah, it didn't look too bad.
They went to the deer district a couple of times, you know. It's they'll be ready to go, man. That's a pretty crazy arena too, so I think it's fine. But what's that? Isn't there a football player? I don't know if he plays for Green Bay or not, but he's from Wisconsin who's been like, he's done that in the past where he just like pounds a couple of beers.
Bakhtiari.
Yeah. Is he a Green Bay player or is he just from Wisconsin?
He's been a Packer for a long time. I don't know if he's still got a contract, but he's definitely like I think we had him on the starters at one point crushing beers. Yeah. It was like him versus Aaron Rodgers going back and forth, right? Same guy. Looks insane. Gonna look even better in 8K.
Let's go.
As we wrap this up here, it is nice to see Jimmy Goldstein back in his courtside seats there. You see him under the net test. That was one of the guys I could see. Oh, yeah, he's there. He's been there both games. He's masked up, of course. You got to be masked up. But Jimmy rocking a beautiful jacket. You know, NBA super family. He's not going to miss these games.
No. I think he really did miss them last year down in the bubble. So he's back, yeah.
All right, we'll take a quick break and then we'll do a little Is This News.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. That would make me so happy. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything, really. It really is. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, if that's a 10-minute low-impact class, they got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear, you know, a 30-minute live DJ ride. DJ John Michael, that guy plays the hits. He always gets me going. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Time for a little Is This News. All right, our first headline. It comes from a website called NBA.com. The headline is viewership for Game 1 of the NBA Finals, up 13% from last year. Lee Ellis, Is This News?
Well, this is huge news, isn't it? Because wasn't the only team anyone wanted to watch in the finals the Los Angeles Lakers in the finals last year? Okay, it was in the bubble, sure. But this is a thing. Like, people complain and say, oh, no one's going to watch Suns versus Bucks. Of course they are. People love watching this sort of stuff. And look, last year I'm sure it was down because of the circumstances, but... Mm-hmm. The fact is, people are tuning in because everyone still is going to watch as long as you're getting to see fun games and big players. And Chris Paul's a big player. Giannis is a two-time MVP. Devin Booker's a star, a rising star. So, you know, people always want to sort of bury the NBA and say, no one's watching anymore. They're too woke, go broke, all that sort of crap. But people love basketball still. It's still a great sport to watch. So, you know, if some people are like, I can't watch it unless I have two big market teams in the finals, don't. I don't care. No one cares. Don't watch it. Just go.
Right.
If that's what you need to be like, it's got to be the big market teams. I'm not watching. Okay. See ya. I'm still watching. I don't care who's in the final. Would have been awesome if the Hawks had made the finals as well. Would have been great. So I think the TV rating stuff, I know from the business side of things, you know, that's how they negotiate the deals with the networks and things like that. But I really don't. I think it's overblown as well how people are saying they're not watching anymore. People's viewing preferences do change over time. They sort of go up and down a little bit, but basketball's fine. No need to worry about it.
Basketball's fine. I do love these type of headlines, though, because I could have very easily picked a different headline that would have said viewership down a
way
whopping
down.
35% if you're comparing to 2019 Raptors and Warriors game one. So up against last year. Very weird circumstances in the bubble, but down to 2 years ago in a more, you know, in a normal season with the Warriors and Raps going there. And that's not even, I believe, even counting like Canada ratings, which were like through the roof when Toronto was playing in the finals task. But are you concerned at all about ratings? That's why I wanted to throw this in here, because some people do. Some people care a lot. Should we?
I don't know how ratings are calculated, and I don't think anybody, unless you're, you know, in the NBA looking at the books, really knows either. I know the big TV money, or the big money comes from TV, but we're not factoring in everything here. We're not factoring in league pass sales. I don't know how the money is calculated, but it is I guess if it's apples to apples, you know, even 19 to this year, it is a bit of a concern. Yeah, 2019, the numbers are way down this year compared to that year. I do still think that this is a bit of a strange year. We're playing here in July, and it shouldn't. It's not totally apples to apples, but considering that, as you said, Skeets, you know, the Toronto viewership and the Canadian viewership isn't counted. It's not obviously a big American market going up against Golden State. Maybe we should care, but again, I don't care seeing these raw numbers because I don't really know how they're calculated. Like, what is taken into account here? We're selling single games now. We're selling League Pass subscriptions, so I'm not sure how it all matters. But I think the league has done well, has bounced back. Like, for instance, even the, you know, the play-in tournament is brand new. Big money gets paid to the league via that, that they didn't have the year before. Obviously, that's going to be factored into the new CBA that wasn't part of last CBA. But anyway, until you know how it's cooked, until you know how the sausage is made, then what? Like, these are just numbers to me. It doesn't really matter.
Well, Warriors-Lakers, the play-in game was the most watched game of the season. And so I think some people are saying, well, okay, that's good. But then, you know, the numbers are down in the finals when you think it would be the popularity of the sport would be at the all-time high, TK. But who cares? Are you one of those people? Or is there something here that you're like, or, and you know, sports are down across the board in terms of viewership over the last couple of years, at least.
Yeah, I'm personally a big who cares on this one. Apparently, ratings are down 54% from 2017. That's a massive number. I actually do think that super teams are good for the league. But it also does not matter at all because, as Bill Shea at The Athletic reported, the NBA is hoping to sign a rights deal after this next CBA is up for $75 billion, and the current one they're on is $24 billion. So ratings are down 50% in 4 years, and they're going to be making three times as much on digital and broadcast rights. I don't personally care about ratings. I'm like Lee. I'm watching it regardless, but if you do care, stars matter, I think. And I think that that's kind of incontrovertible. Like you're saying, Skeets, the most watched game of the year this season was LeBron versus Curry.
Yeah.
You know, last year, the NBA was in a bubble. They were going up against the NFL. Things were super weird. They're still a little weird this year, but I don't know. The finals has been fun. Hopefully people want to tune in. But if not, the NBA is still going to be around and it's still going to be on TV.
The only ratings that matter, No Dunks ratings, baby. And ratings are up. So keep subscribing, keep liking, keep leaving your comments and emailing in your questions. All right. Our next headline from ESPN. The Mavs assistant Jamal Mosley emerging as strong frontrunner to be the Magic's next head coach. Looking very likely like he is going to be coaching in Orlando. Is this news? TK, you get us started.
Well, I guess it's technically not news quite yet, but pretty close to some good news. I know Mavs fans were pretty miffed that Jamal Mosley didn't get to take over for Rick Carlisle down there in Dallas. And definitely, there was a lot of talk from Mavericks fans that it felt very strange that Rick Carlisle was really going to bat for Jason Kidd, despite the fact that it seemed like Mosley was the next guy up. But maybe Rick Carlisle was just saving Jamal Mosley from a dramatic situation. But, and honestly, like, stars want star coaches, so it's not surprising to me that the Mavericks would go another way. And I'd love to see somebody else get a new chance here. Jamal Mosley's been around the league for 15 years at this point. No idea if it works out, but the Magic are a young team. Apparently, Mosley specializes in player development, so that seems like a good mix because there's a lot of young guys there in Orlando with a lot of rough edges. So they need somebody to teach him the best way to play NBA basketball, build their skills, and put something together. Let's see if Mosley's the guy.
Tass, what do you think?
Yeah, in theory, it does sound good because, yeah, he's a player development guy. He's a, you know, a role player himself, having bounced around the world playing, played in Australia, played in South Korea. And then the Magic have some juicy, juicy draft picks. If they can get a star to go along with their, you know, potential stars in Cole Anthony. Did you see Mo Wagner playing for Germany in that international tournament? I do believe that Jamal Mosley is going to be liked. Because if you see the tweets from NBA players far and wide, they are super excited for this guy to get an opportunity. So hopefully it does happen for Jamal Mosley.
Lee, is this news?
I would have liked to have seen him take the Dallas job because he certainly seemed a little more ready for that. And instead, the Mavericks now don't get Mosley, and they don't even get him on the sidelines either. So I think they're going to miss him because he had a pretty good relationship there with Luka. As for his chances in Orlando, I mean, best of luck to him. It's a tough situation there because there isn't a ton of star talent. So he's got a lot of work to do there to be successful. But hopefully he can prove that the Mavericks may be messed up by not signing him there to keep sort of continue on working with the players that he already is familiar with. So we'll see. But congratulations if he does get that full-time job. I would like to see him in Orlando.
Oh, yeah. He's going to connect with RJ Hampton because he played in Australia as well. They got some potential. I don't know. I'm drinking the magic juice right
now. They have two picks, too, right? Like, yeah. They have a lot of
Yeah, I'd still rather Luka, but yeah.
Yeah, but hopefully he's given a long runway here to try and grow. Yeah. I mean, that's the hope.
That is the hope. But as we know in the NBA, that's not always the way it pans out. Dave Fizdale's had two coaching jobs that have lasted a season and a bit, you know, because you go into a situation, it's like the results. People sort of say we're going to have patience, but if they start out 10 and 30, you know, people are going to start already. He's going to be on the hot seat. So, we'll see.
If he does take this job or the Magic give it to him, and it's looking likely, that would leave two still openings, I believe. The Wizards don't have their head coach. Wes Unseld Jr. is a likely favorite. He was, I guess, in the running for this Orlando Magic one as well. And then the Pelicans still don't have a head coach with... Mm-hmm. Willie Green's name is coming up. There's the Weatherspoon, of course, Charles Lee's, a bunch of names. So those are the two left if the Magic can make this official here with Mosley. Final headline is from Real GM. They're always coming through with the juicy headlines. It's not as juicy as it maybe first reads, but the Cavs definitely looking into trading for the number one pick. Is this newsworthy? I say no, and I included it, but this is coming by way of an ESPN report on Wednesday that had Cleveland, Houston, New Orleans, and OKC as teams making overtures to evaluate what it would cost to trade for the number one pick. So, like this is classic stuff here, what happens around the draft. You know, we're thinking about it. We're calling the Pistons, seeing if they would do it. So, no, not really newsworthy. Fascinating to think what it would take to get, like, a Tatum-Fultz situation back in 17, 76ers acquiring the top pick from the Celtics in that deal. That took... their third pick, and then an 18 first-rounder by way of the Lakers to make that happen. So probably it'd have to be something similar. Again, if the Pistons were even to consider this, Lee, taking the number three pick from the Cavs because they jumped up there in the draft, and then I assume an unprotected future first-round pick, and who knows, maybe even another one of their young players. Would that entice the Pistons if they... are a little, you know, not 100% sure they want to take Cade Cunningham or someone else, and they move down a little bit. Hey, it worked out for the Celtics, I guess.
Yeah, that was helped by Brian Colangelo, though, wasn't it? Really? Giving it up a little too easy. If I'm the Pistons, unless someone's offering me five unprotected first-rounders, I'm not making that deal at all. Okay. If all these teams are interested, and you know OKC's got a ton of picks as well, play them off against each other, say... okay, give me eight first-round picks and you can have Kate coming in. Because otherwise, you're the Pistons. None. They haven't been in this doable position. The Pistons is not a free agent destination. Right. They need a star. And now, I don't know tons about Cade Cunningham, but I do know Fade for Cade has been talked about all season long. So this guy seems like a no-brainer as the number one choice.
Is the gap between Cade Cunningham and the others that wide? That's what we don't know.
Yeah, Lee, is it?
Yeah.
I know you don't know.
Like I say, if I'm the Pistons, unless it's just like an absurd amount of unprotected first-round picks, I'm just like, sorry, we're taking Cade Cunningham.
Okay, you know. Lee, honestly, you hang up right away if you're the Pistons. If Cleveland says we're giving you the number three pick of this draft, we'll give you an unprotected first round pick, we're a shit team, by the way, so that's going to be good, and we'll give you Sexton. I would say
give me one more unprotected first round, we got a deal. So I'm getting Sexton, who I think is Sexton is on the way up, but then I'm getting the number three pick and I'm getting two more unprotected
yeah,
because
first
I'm saying why would I do that deal when Sammy Presti here, he's got a barrel full of picks, he needs a star too.
Yeah, they're not as high as number three in this year's draft.
I know, but I'm just like, it's like you want to be like Danny Ainge, where Danny Ainge always used to say, that's one thing I respected about him, he would say you have to give me six first round picks if you want to make this deal done. Now, no one really bought on it or bid on it, but that's the way. If I'm the Pistons, I'm just like, almost no way you're giving up this first round pick, this number
one. Speaking of Sam Presti, on The Athletic, James Edwards did write about the Detroit Pistons and OKC potentially making a deal, OKC offering the number six pick, and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah.
For the
still
number
don't do
one.
It. I still don't do it for that. I do for like Gilgeous-Alexander is very good. I like him, but very I good. Wouldn't. Yeah, I would still need more in return for that because I'd be a little concerned if Sam Presti still is willing to give up on Gilgeous-Alexander already. That's a little bit of a concern for me.
That would be your.
What does he know?
Yeah, exactly. Why is he trying to give us Gilgeous-Alexander? He's like basically their best player right now.
Yeah,
and he wants
to
give him away. You know, and for that. And what'd you say? Number six pick? No, there's way more value in the number one overall pick than that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Despite you never seeing Kate Cunningham play.
No, I'm just saying the
could,
you
if
know.
I lined up 10 guys and one of them was Kate Cunningham, could you even pick him out of a lineup?
I do you think so because he's like? Yeah, because I think he's got a bit of a like big fro, hasn't he? I think
he's got longer hair.
I think so.
Good start. Yeah, he's got with fros in this.
Yeah,
one.
Well, so yeah, no, not that much. But
we went over it. He kind of has some Josh Childress.
That's
vibes.
That's right. Yeah, that's
well,
right.
I'm putting Josh Childress in the lineup, so don't pick him.
I'm in trouble now.
Okay. Yeah. Look, I said it's not newsworthy because I don't think it's going to happen. And this is just classic smokescreen stuff where you get a lot of this tray of like, oh, we'd love to move up. And I'm with you, Lee. All of that, like going back and forth with you, I was playing a little devil's advocate. I don't think the Pistons, for the first time in forever, getting the number one pick are going to trade it away, especially when people are so high on Cade Cunningham. Does that seem fair, TK?
Well, and it's the first time ever that the Pistons have moved up, right? I don't know. It doesn't seem likely to me, and I hope the Pistons don't do it. But I love the idea that, hey, could this be news because the Cavs are definitely looking into it? I don't know. It just basically means they're picking up the phone. It's called doing your job when you're a GM. Congratulations. But I am a little interested to see that the Cavs would be okay trading any of their young guys is what it feels like. Sexton, Garland, Okoro. We've seen like Jarrett Allen come up as a guy that they would be fine to ditch were they, you know, end up taking Evan Mobley or whatever. But I don't know. It seemed like the Cavs had something cooking at the beginning of this season. You know, Lee was wearing his shirt. Colin Sexton was on fire from three. But they're ready to completely change gears on the rebuild. I think that's honestly fair. I don't think they have a number one guy there right now. Obviously, that's why they're looking into trading for the number one pick, but it's probably not going to happen.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Tweet of the Night starts with a cool story on CNBC about Arlen Hamilton, who was homeless in Mississippi in her 30s, and she found a way to start a venture capital fund which has received millions and millions from investors, including Mark Cuban. It's called Backstage Capital. She then turns around and invests in companies. It's a neat article and video. It's on CNBC. Now, the article is called, it's titled, How I Got Mark Cuban to Invest $6 Million in My Startup. And Cuban shared it on Twitter, a straight share from the article. You know, he didn't compose his own tweet or add a link. You know how you just share from a website?
Yeah.
So it just reads exactly the article title. So his tweet reads, How I Got Mark Cuban to Invest $6 million in My Startup. All right. So a smartass by the name of Greg Coffey, if that's his real name, responds, You are Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Greg Coffey, you are funny. Which Mark Cuban responds to that? No shit. How I Got Mark Cuban to Invest $6 million in My Startup. You are Mark Cuban. No shit. This Greg Coffey, he is a funny guy. He's done some funny things before. Jose Canseco once tweeted, looking for a crypto token developer. Greg Coffey responded to him. Hey, it's Greg. DM me, Jose. I can help. Jose DM'd him. Hey, are you a token dev? Greg responds, no way, Jose.
Oh, this is good. This is good.
This Greg Coffey guy, man. He's a funny guy. He's got 140,000 followers. I don't really know his deal. Yeah.
People love coffee.
I think he's a coffee man in Kentucky who also operates a funny Twitter account. I'm not sure. I'm not exactly sure. You never know with the internet. But anyways, he made me chuckle. And let's circle back to Nick Nurse here with the fans. Tom Haverstraw, you get a shout out here because of this great tweet. There are 3 8K cams on planet Earth, and one of them zeroed in on this guy. That's good. That's good, that's Tom Haverstraw. So there we go. Tweet of the night.
All right, let's wrap up this drop podcast with a little rapid fire fun. JD, you got the questions today, my man. How about it?
Mm-hmm. So, guys, we recently learned that Rip Hamilton is one of Devin Booker's idols. Rip Hamilton. Mm. A little unexpected. I mean, right? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess a little bit.
I guess.
Some people were shocked, yeah.
Did you guys name Rip Hamilton in the top 15 added to the top 75?
No,
I don't think so. Anyways, who's someone you look up to that may surprise people? Tass.
I look up to Zendaya. She's a singer, a young actor. I always am impressed when child actors can grow up and be very normal. So I'm impressed by her. She's moving into adult roles as well. She didn't just flame out as a kid. She's in the new Spider-Man, if that's a thing. Her real name is Zendaya. Impressed by that. She can just take her real name and move on to her adulthood. I think her look was shared by Nora a few weeks ago. I saw her around the Instagram story. She was in a dress. She was wearing a dress. But it was a cool look. So Zendaya, she's cool. She's right. Cool.
Yeah, I love her.
Nice.
Lee.
King of the fourth quarter, Kenny Beecham. What a great story this guy is. He's just made himself into a star on YouTube. Over a million followers or subscribers. Puts out some great content, keeps pumping it out there, and had him on the show. So I think he was my favorite guest on Happy Hour, and I had one of my good friends on as well, but I think Kenny was... I think Kenny was even better because he's just a hustler. He's working hard. He's doing his thing. He's doing it really well. And one of the things I did watch on his YouTube channel, which I didn't know he did, was basically... what's that when you're watching a season on 2K from 1993? It was the Bulls and the Suns final, and Nets and someone. Anyway, it was a while ago now, and he was into it, man. And this was before he was even born, so he's not just like a new fan who only really appreciates the game in the last 10 or 15 years. He goes deep, so. Yeah, Kenny, man. He's doing really, really good work. I wish him all the best. And I hope we have him on another Happy Hour sometime soon because a lot of fun to talk to. Great guy.
He resonates with you because he loves the NBA. That's why. It comes across in all his videos.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, he just feels like a fan who's made his own career out of what he does. And he does such a fantastic job. So, Kenny.
Yeah,
okay.
I love Kenny. Great one. Yeah. Skeets. Yeah.
This is a bit of a weird one, but anyone that has ever... gone on BattleBots.
Anyone?
Yeah, because I just have such admiration for people that can build things.
Yeah.
So you could really extend this to someone that can fix a dishwasher. But BattleBots specifically, for those that don't know, I think it's off the air now, but it's basically a show, a tournament where competitors design and then operate remote controlled armed machines, armored and armed machines to fight it out in an arena. Just the incredible designs and ideas these people would come up with is amazing. Go ahead, Lee.
Was that an extension of Robot Wars?
Yeah, it's a similar idea.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk between me, Jared, and my buddy Dub of flying out to California, trying to get in the crowd of BattleBots. Like, we were really looking into tickets. We have a WhatsApp group for BattleBots, but again, just the I just can't wrap my head around people that can do that.
Yeah.
Take apart something and put it back together. I just find it incredible. So anybody that's ever been on BattleBots, from Tombstone to Tombstone was amazing. Oh my god.
Flip-a-canoe.
One of the greatest ever. Yeah.
Yeah, I was always terrible at predicting who would win, you know? They show each one. Like, this guy doesn't have a chance, and then he would destroy, you know? Like, it's just a box with a spike out of it, and then it destroys. But anyways, yeah. Yeah, great answer.
Skeets, you're making a bot. What kind of bot are you making? Spinner, flipper, rammer, smasher?
It's tough, man, because they started to get so smart, like... You know, there would be, it was like basketball where it would be like, oh, now it's a 3-point shooting game. Oh, well, now we got a counter with size. So it's like, you know, spinners had their moments, but then it was like, well, if we can flip them, they're toast.
Yeah.
But then they start making it so their robot or their battle bot can like operate on both sides. Like you can't flip it.
Yeah, the game has changed.
So it's tough to answer, but I think I would just go, just because that'd be fun to destroy the other one. Yeah, a powerful spinner. It just does the most damage,
cool.
I think.
Yeah.
It looks, because it can send them flying. guys, BattleBots, we should start a podcast. Too bad it's off the air now. I can't believe it's no longer. But
Shout out
to anyone that ever went on BattleBots. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Speaking of talented people, did you guys see the Spelling Bee winner?
Yeah.
She's from Louisiana, Zayla Avant-Garde. There's a basketball tie-in because she's super duper talented. All right. You know, first American black girl to win. Okay, she's really, really good at spelling. Really, really good at spelling. But she's Guinness World Record holder for dribbling multiple balls simultaneously. Mm. She loves basketball. She thinks she can go on to be a player in the WNBA. She describes spelling as a side hobby. Yeah, you can check out her Instagram page. Yeah, and she went and frickin' won. She thinks she's a basketball prodigy, but just a good speller who practices 7 hours a day and took it, which is pretty cool. She's pretty cool.
Well, that's going to be like the number one WNBA jersey to have once she makes it to the league.
Oh, yeah.
Her last name is Avant-Garde.
Yes, her dad changed their last name to Avant-Garde. But,
that's awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's great.
Congrats to her.
All right, guys. So just over a week ago, we were down at the Fortress, and I watched Giannis's knee bend backwards with my own two eyes. He could barely walk off the court. It seemed bad. Even he said, when the play happened, I thought I would be out for a year. Turns out, he only missed 2 games, and then he said he felt no pain exactly 1 week later. When's the time you thought you were down for the count, only to bounce back immediately? Tass.
I got to go back to the broken leg. Well, when I broke it, my leg. Yeah, I had to. It was a week later. It was my man Dave Seton's wedding. 7 days later, the doctor told me, you're not going to be able to attend a wedding in 7 days. I said, I've got to, mister. I got him my wheelchair, and I showed up at that wedding. I was on painkillers. My pupils were like marbles. They were huge. I couldn't drink. wasn't feeling all that well. Somebody actually put me up on the head table in my wheelchair. I was on a bit of a platform, and kind of dropped my wheelchair, and it rocked my freaking leg. I felt it through my painkillers, which I was popping like crazy. Giannis comes back and plays basketball. I showed up at Dave Seton's wedding. Dave Seton was actually asking me, hey, are you going to be able to get there for the photos? I'm like, man, I'm in the hospital. I need to know. We need to be balanced on both sides, he was telling me. We got to have as many groomsmen as bridesmaids. Are you going to be there? I showed up. I can't even remember it because I was high on painkillers. But
you're in the photos.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm wheelchair? Or
physically, I'm there. Mentally, like, I'm not there. I don't know. I think I popped up for a couple of them. But anyways, that was fun. I was glad I got to be there. Beautiful beautiful blue that he chose for our ties. I think I still have it. It's great blue. Anyways.
Were you wearing a suit?
And they're still married. Yeah. That's an important part to the story. Because, like, you know, this is one of these weddings that's just over after 2 years. It's like, yeah, I did all this.
Yeah, that's because of Tass. If they had an unbalanced photo, it would be over years ago.
I was thinking about that. Trey asked if I was wearing a suit. I was trying to think, like, could I put on pants? Because that was freaking hard. But I put on Put on fresh underwear, put on fresh pants, and I made it out there. Yeah.
Pants were a lot bigger back then, you know. If there were a wedding in 2021, I don't know. Yeah. You might have to go shorts like Lee Ellis.
No doubt. Lele.
Yeah, so when I came back to Toronto 15 years ago, I guess it was now, I came via New York for 2 weeks first to catch up with a friend. And that flight from Melbourne to Los Angeles to New York, it's a killer because you're flying all day and you actually arrive before you leave, right? So you leave at 10 a.m. in the morning, you arrive at 7 a.m. of the same morning in L.A., then you catch the across-country flight to New York, right? So I turn up in New York, it's like 4 in the afternoon, you're just like so gassed. But you're in New York, so you get a bit of a second wind. So I caught up my friend, he's like, let's go and have a drink. I'm like, yeah, why not? Let's go and have a drink. I just got so incredibly drunk, I could not... It was one of those ones where I legit woke up the next day and I was like, how did I get into this bed? I do not remember anything. And then the hangover from the alcohol just hit me as well. And I was like, oh my God, I felt sick. But I think it was also the morning of the Super Bowl. So I was like, all right. I sort of slept until, I don't know, because the Super Bowl, what, 8 o'clock?
Something like that.
Yeah. So I slept until like 4 in the afternoon that day. And I was just like, I feel not great, but it's the Super Bowl. I'm in New York. I got to go out and enjoy it. So I got back out and got back on that horse. I had a few more drinks, but oh man, I was like, I was feeling that jet lag hangover for like about 3 days still afterwards. But I got up for the Super Bowl. I had to. So
I love sports, man. He really does. Skates. I guess similar answer to Lee in a way. The truth is, basically any time I've ever been on a boat after a heavy day or night of drinking the day before, it's a rough start. It's happened in Italy. It's happened in BC. That was a bachelor party. You know, just like the huge big night of drinking and then the early boat ride the next morning. Not a great recipe. But I do have the ability to, like, you know, let me ask the captain, what side? Hey, where do you want me puking? I'm going to puke. Just tell me where you want me. It's going to happen and I'll be okay. And I can rally pretty quickly after that. And I have... at least 3 times in my life, all over the world. But my God, it's nothing worse than being super, basically drunk still in the morning or hungover and then getting on a boat. Ugh. But you know what? Actually just gets it out of you real quick and then you're good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Seasick hangover, not a great combo.
It's just don't go, you know, if you're on a boat where you can go underneath, never do that.
Oh, no.
Just get it out of your system and you'll feel 100 times better. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, last one. This week we heard Judith Hill absolutely crush the Star Spangled Banner before Game 1. It was incredible. So, if you could have any artist, living or dead, perform the national anthem before your Wednesday night run, which I love just picturing, just Elton John showing up for 8 guys standing at attention... that. Who would it be? Who would you have sing the national anthem before your Wednesday night run, Tass?
Oh, so you know, JD, out of respect for you, I thought about this one long and hard.
Thank you for
that. And I don't think there's anyone quite as stirring as the man who sings quite often for the Stanley Cup playoffs in Canadian arenas, where he will sing like 2 lines of the national anthem, then everybody else has to take over. Mm-hmm. And so it's not so much about the singer. Nothing would get me more inspired on a Wednesday night run than everybody in the lineup singing themselves about their country. So I'm copping out. I'm taking the guy. I don't even know his name, but he bells it out. He's kind of like an opera singer, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I don't know.
I know who you're talking about. I just can't remember. I'm blanking on his name, too. All right.
Yeah. So he'll sing at the beginning of an Oilers game. He'll sing 2 lines, and then everybody's got to take over. Now, you know, if some of the guys don't know the words to the national anthem, we can have it on a little bit of a screen there. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But that would get me jacked to go set a mean pick in a basketball game.
Yeah. That would get you jacked. Art Hamilton and Cheeves singing the Canadian anthem along with you.
Well, I think it would be the American anthem. Yeah, patriotism.
We're getting the Canadian guy to do the American. Wow, holy moly. Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. Lele?
Yeah, I took a bit of a different angle for this question, and I thought, you know, if I sing it, then it doesn't really have any pop. Everyone's going to like, great, that was awesome. Let's go move on. Let's just play. So I want to actually sing it before the game three of the NBA Finals on Sunday night, right? Because okay. Judith Hill did such a great job and everyone's like, oh my God, the anthem is awesome again. Let me sing it. So everyone's like, oh, that's why we don't need it before every single game. Just do it once. All right, we don't want someone up there, you know, who's just like, unless you're going to have some brilliant singer every time, we just don't need it. So it would help sort of my case that we do the anthem once in the playoffs. Once in the playoffs, and I guess once before game seven of the finals, if it gets that far. That's all we need. And this would have people going, yeah, remember that guy who did it? You know, he didn't even know the words too, because I always thought for the longest time, when they say dawn's early light, I always thought that was just donzily light. And I was like, what the hell is a donzily light? So, you know. Yeah.
Donzily flashlights.
Yeah. Because, like, yeah. All the games that I got, they used to sing the Star Spangled Banner, but, you know, no one had the words. So it was just like, by the donzily light. Yeah. Wonder what that means.
Definitely a ghost blends together.
Yeah.
A very weird answer to a very weird question. Bring it home, Skeets.
Yeah, I won't go as weird with this answer as the other two guys here. You said Dead or Alive. I think the greatest anthem ever sung was Whitney Houston. So give me Whitney Houston.
Nice.
That's a stirring rendition. That'll get me fired up to play some hoops on a Wednesday night with the guys. So, yeah. Rest in peace to Whitney, but bring her back and have her sing on Wednesday nights down at the church gym. All right. That's rapid fire. That's a crazy edition of the Drop Podcast. Shout out again to the stream team for joining us live. Smash that like button. Subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube and leave your comments below the video. Keep your questions coming. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. Get yourself an athletic subscription. Go to TheAthletic.com/NoDunks. And finally, go to NoDunks.com. Get your No Dunks merch. We've showed you before. We got the Bucks and the Suns NBA Finals collection and a whole lot of other t-shirts. There it is, JD, showing you the Bucks one. There's the Suns one. So go to NoDunks.com to get your No Dunks merch. Lee, have a safe flight, my man, to Amsterdam. That is where you're going, right?
I hope so,
can't
yes.
wait to see the Wi-Fi connection on Monday.
Yeah, weather permitting. We got a pretty nasty...
New York, it's like they're flooding in New York right
now.
Yeah. I saw the subway. It was insane.
Yeah, it was just a downpour here last night. It rained all night, so we'll see. We'll see if we get out to
the
airport.
Your flight's later today.
10 o'clock tonight, where it's... strong chance of thunderstorms from about 6 p.m. So we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, be safe, and hopefully we'll be talking to you on Monday. We'll be back here on Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern live to break down Game 3 of the NBA Finals. Hope to see you then. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, everybody, stay safe, right? Just stay safe. That's all I got to say.
Embrace the weekend, people.
You could stay.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.